Okay, so the other experiment we are doing is a reduction reaction, specifically the reduction of 9-fluorinone. And there are two basic ways to do a reduction in chemistry. There is what we call catalytic hydrogenation. And this is where you take a catalyst, it's typically a metal like nickel or a metal complex with a couple of different metals. You take hydrogen gas, and usually it requires a little bit of pressure and a little bit of high heat, but not always. And this is the preferred method of reduction reactions in the chemical industry. And the reason for that is not necessarily 100% obvious. And this is actually a financial incentive for green chemistry. I haven't brought up green chemistry much up to this point, but we're going to start focusing a little bit on it over the next couple of weeks. And one of the ways that you make a reaction more green is by decreasing or eliminating waste. Okay, and if we think about the chemical industry, they're making tons of chemical waste all the time because those are the amounts that they're typically working with. In the case of catalytic hydrogenations, however, the metal catalyst can be re-isolated and used multiple times. So you're not throwing away your catalyst every time you do the reaction. But more importantly, there aren't large amounts of any waste product produced. The reaction, the products, your product. There aren't any side reaction, well, yeah, there's going to be some side reaction products, but there aren't any direct specific waste products that are going to be produced every single time. Like when we did the Grignard reaction, there's a little bit of magnesium left over that we had to deal with and some other things that we had to deal with. That's not the case here with catalytic hydrogenations. Okay, so the chemical industry does this for the financial benefit because they don't have to dispose of the waste. They don't have to pay for the disposal. The net benefit of it is that particular compound can be sold at a slightly cheaper amount, and it helps with the green side of chemistry. Okay, so again, multiple things that you can do to make reactions green. We just talked about one, and we're going to talk about a couple others in the next couple of weeks. Okay. Teaching labs, however, usually don't do catalytic hydrogenation reactions. In terms of the undergraduate level organic chemistry lab, I know of five. I've looked them up, and there's about five of them. As an undergraduate, I did one of them, but these are not reactions where we have a tank of hydrogen gas just sitting there and we're pumping it into the reaction. Usually you do these reactions where you're generating the hydrogen gas in situ within the reaction itself, because it's a much safer way to do it. Okay, so not normally done at this level of a teaching lab. When you get into the more advanced labs, that's when you're going to see catalytic hydrogenation reactions, etc. So if we're not going to do the catalytic hydrogenation, we're going to use a reducing agent. And there are just a slew of reducing agents, a lot of different ones, and the one that you use depends upon how strong the reducing agent is relative to the functional group that you're trying to reduce. One of the common reducing agent classes that you should be familiar with are the hydride reducing agents. And you usually see two of them. lithium aluminum hydride and sodium borohydride. There are others. And whenever you're doing a reaction with something like this, a hydride reducing agent produces the hydride ion, which is H minus. So if you're going to do a hydride reducing reaction and you're going to have H minus ions floating around, you have to concern yourself with any H pluses. So similar to the Grignard reaction we did last time, we need to worry about proton sources. And last time I said the largest proton source is typically the solvent. Okay? And so again, no water, can't use acetic acid as a solvent and so forth. So there are limitations to using these reducing agents. However, with our reaction, we are going to be using sodium borohydride, and the solvent we're going to be using is methanol. And if I asked you, what are, in organic chemistry, what are the normal acidic functional groups that you would think of? You would say carboxylic acid, phenols, and alcohols. Okay? Methanol is considered an acidic solvent. Yet here we are using acidic solvents with a reducing agent that can't use acidic solvents. Okay, so there has to be a reason for this. And guess what? We're going to go back down general chemistry lane for a little bit. Okay, so you can look at a bunch of the different hydride reducing agents. And I only have four of them here, but they give us a general idea of the strength, okay? And the strength has to do with the electronegativity difference between the metal and hydrogen, okay? Well, why does that matter? Well, simple softball question here. How many electrons does hydrogen normally have? One. So H minus, where's that extra electron coming from? It's coming from the metal that the hydrogen is bonded to. Okay? And so we see in these lithium, calcium, aluminum, and boron. Those are the four that I have listed. And specifically within these metals, which electrons are being taken? They're being taken from the valence shell electrons. Okay? Well, if we look at boron and then we look at aluminum, they are in the same column on the periodic table. Atoms in the same column in a periodic table are known to be in what? The same what? Starts with a G. Group. There we go. And atoms that are in the same group have similar what? Properties. The word I'm looking with starts with a V. A valence shell electron configuration. Because remember, it's the valence shell electrons that we're taking. And here's another softball one. Which atom's bigger, aluminum or boron? Aluminum. The valence shell electrons of aluminum are further away from the nucleus. And remember, it's the nucleus with the positive charges in there because of the protons. And yeah, I know there's neutrons in there. But the protons in the nucleus are helping keep the electrons attracted to the atom. If boron's valence shell electrons are much closer to the nucleus, what that means is they're harder to give up. We have a word for that. That's called electronegativity. atoms that give up their electrons easier versus atoms that give up their electrons less. Okay? So we can actually look at the electronegativity difference between the metal and hydrogen. And if we look at the difference between those two numbers, we can actually determine how strong this reducing agent is. Okay? So lithium and calcium, the electronegativity difference of the metal is roughly 1. Hydrogen is 2.1, so the difference is roughly 1.1. These are very, very powerful reducing agents. In order to use these types of reducing agents, you actually have to have a special license, and you have to have special training. Because if you make a mistake using one of these reducing agents, you can burn a building down. Search UT Chemistry Department fire, and you will see a fire roughly 30 or 40 years ago that happened, and it happened because of a mistake that was made with one of these reducing agents. And those people were properly trained. They just made a mistake. So I'm trying to tell you, you have to be very, very careful. And even when you have the training and you have all of the special requirements and everything, all it takes is one mistake. Okay, have you ever wondered why the 400 hallway of Welch looks really weird compared to the other parts of Welch building? Okay, that's the reason, the fire. Okay, so fortunately, nobody was hurt in that fire. That's the most important thing. Everybody was able to get out. No harm done to any person. A lot of harm done to graduate students in terms of all their data, because a big chunk of all their data was gone. Yeah, it was not fun. But now let's take a look at lithium aluminum hydride. The lithium is 1.5. The difference is 0.6. So it's about half that of the first two. And this is a weaker reducing agent, but it is still fairly strong. And so you have to be extra careful. Can't use acidic proton sources, period. No water, have to use aprotic solvents. That's just it. If you're going to use lithium aluminum hydride, that's what you have to do. Now, sodium borohydride, it has an electronegativity of 2. Boron, almost identical to that of hydrogen. Difference of about 0.1. So again, much, much weaker reducing agent. And what that means is that first, it's safer to work with, okay? Lithium aluminum hydride, if you expose it to the atmosphere and you have enough of it, you can actually have a fire, okay? Not normal things to happen, but it does require a little bit of everything to line up properly, but it is dangerous. You need to be careful working with it. Sodium borohydride, you need to be careful with it, but you don't have to worry about it bursting into flames unless you're working with tons of it, okay? So if we're working with a couple of milligrams or whatever, all we need to worry about is, hey, are we destroying it by exposing it to the atmosphere? We're not gonna worry about a fire or anything like that. And that also means that we can use solvents like methanol, because this allows us more flexibility. Not everything's going to be soluble in ether or n-hexane or, you know, the other aprotic solvents. But methanol, a lot of things are going to be soluble in it. So it gives us a lot more flexibility with our solvent choices. The cost of it, however, is that there are functional groups that sodium borohydride will not reduce. Esters are one of them. And so if we have an ester, we cannot use sodium borohydride to reduce this functional group. We have to use a stronger one in order for that to work. But this does give us an actual synthetic advantage. So let's say we have a molecule like this. It has a ketone and an ester functional group. And we want to reduce only the ketone. If we use sodium borohydride, it is specifically going to target the ketone, and that's it. You do not have to worry about reducing the other functional group. Okay? So this particular reducing agent has weaknesses, can't reduce all the functional groups that you might want it to, but it also has some big benefits. First, it's a whole lot safer to work with. Okay? And in teaching labs, that's kind of almost number one. Is it really safe to work with? Yes, like it already. Two, it allows you to do reactions with multiple functional groups, knowing that it is going to target the particular functional you want to reduce because it cannot reduce the other functional groups that are also present. So that's a very flexible reducing agent that we can use, all right? So again, we are going to be using sodium borohydride, and the reaction mechanism is fairly straightforward. We have our ketone, which is the electrophilic carbon. Our nucleophile, of course, is the hydride ion. So we get the formation of the carbon oxygen single bond. And all we have to do now is get it to the alcohol at the very end. And guess what? We have reduced the carbonyl to the corresponding alcohol. It goes through a couple of steps. So the oxygen is going to attack the boron. And so we get this sodium boroxide salt. And sodium borohydride has four equivalent hydrogens that it can react with to form your products. So one mole of sodium borohydride reacts with four moles of our ketone, okay? And so this reaction can happen three more times until we get the final peroxide salt. Then we take a weak acid solution and we end up with our alcohol. Again, relatively straightforward experiment. Takes about 2 hours from start to finish. So same amount of time period for both experiments. Relatively same difficulty level, so it does not matter which one you choose, you're going to be doing about the same amount of work. That's something that I always strive to do. You know, choose one or the other. I'm out in 5 minutes, you're out in 3 hours. That's going to cause a lot of friction in the lab, okay? So I do try to make sure that the amount of work that you're going to do is always about the same. Product analysis, again, is relatively straightforward. Going to be taking a melting point. Going to be calculating a percent yield. Good yields are in the neighborhood of about 65%. Most of you are going to get between 30 and 40%. The reason for this, again, is that it is done on microscale levels. So again, we're only expecting a very small amount of product, and any minor loss of product due to just a simple mistake leads to massive losses of products. Okay, so even though the reaction does work fairly well, you're not necessarily going to get a really good yield out of this because it's on such a small scale. This reaction also has a really nice indicator telling you if it's working or not. Because 9-fluorinone is a bright canary yellow. And when you add the sodium borohydride to it, that bright canary yellow goes to a very, very faint yellowish white, okay? So it just basically tells you, yep, the reduction has worked. And those are always really nice things. Like, again, the Grignard reaction last week, It started off as a clear, cloudy solution, then started to get that kind of dark brown color. Hey, it's working, okay? So those are always really nice things to have in a reaction when your color changes or something that's supposed to be a signal says, yep, this reaction is working. So there is that. And of course we are, why does it always do that? I do not know. We're going to be taking an IR. The big thing we are looking for in our IR is that we are going from a ketone to an aldehyde, or excuse me, to an alcohol. So we are looking for the disappearance of the carbonyl peak. We are dealing with a solid alcohol that has a really, really big carbon footprint to it. So remember I said when you're going to deal with these types of alcohols, you're going to have a very small, narrow OH peak. And so when you take the IR of your product, again, you're looking for the disappearance of this carbonyl and the appearance of a really small, narrow OH peak. Okay. No major safety issues that we want to focus on, except I will mention that the sodium borohydride, a couple of things. One, even though it's relatively safe to work with, that doesn't mean it can't get degraded. And if you leave the bottle open to the atmosphere, even though our labs have a constant relative humidity, much lower than the outside, it still has some humidity in it, and it starts to degrade, right? So when you go get it, you want to make sure you have everything set up so that when you get your sodium borohydride, you go to your reaction and you add it. It's not exposed to the atmosphere for any significant period of time. And if you are the last person there, you have to take that extra small step to screw the cap on the bottle, all right? We also do not want to get sodium borohydride on our skin, because if it does happen, you're going to start reducing your skin. All right. It only does the outside layer. So it might create a little, you know, spot on that particular area, but it's going to be gone within, you know, a couple of days. All right. So again, not really serious. You just want to make sure you don't get it on your skin. And if you do, rinse it thoroughly with water immediately, okay? And it's nowhere near the pain thing that I talked about with bromine or the acid, okay? This is more of a, that's a chemical, it shouldn't be on my skin, I need to clean it off. And if you do see a spot there, like I said, it'll be gone in a couple of days, all right? Any question with the fluorinone reaction? Okay, so a couple of things. First, the bad dad joke of the day. Okay, so what do you get when you try to photocopy a bunch of fruit? Paper jams. There you go. All right, now I like that one. All right. Okay. I told you last time that I was going to talk about grades. And here we go. So this is a section from the spring semester. And it's in essence about the same period where we are right now, okay? We have, at this point, basically the first six reports turned in up through substitution, and we have up to the substitution quiz, okay? So at this point, about 950 points possible. In this particular section, these were the students' totals, and then the way I explained in the video, I simply list them from highest to lowest and start looking for the breaks. And if this had been it. No more points possible. I would have put the cut between 851 and 837. And by the way, as I stated, we start with the natural cutoffs, okay? So in this particular case, an A cutoff would be 833 and a half. And I don't know why Excel put that all the way on the top. That should be down here. Pardon me. That's weird. Because this should have paid more attention to what I was doing when I made this file, huh? All right. So you belong here. Come on. Control X, Control V. There we go. Now we got to change the color. No. All right. Like I said, if the cutoff, if the grades were done here, I would have put the A cutoff at 851. I would have put this was supposed to be purple. Sorry. I would have put the A minus cutoff at 819 and the B plus cutoff would be at 793. And again, these are lower than the natural cutoff. So like I tried to explain in the first video is, I don't look at percentages, I look at the total points and where I can put the cutoffs, okay? And so forth. The reason why I'm doing this is because I wanted to point out that at the end of the semester, there were actually five A's, okay? Right now there's only four. We ended up having a fifth A in this particular section. There were three A minuses. There was one B plus, or excuse me, two B pluses, and there were two Bs, okay? And the B pluses and the A minuses moved, okay? So that it's not guaranteed in stone at this point that if you are sitting at number four with an A minus, you're guaranteed an A minus. You could move up, you could move down, okay? So it gives you two motivations. I'm doing really well, but there's still quite a lot of points left. I need to continue doing well to at least keep the grade I have. And there is a chance, there's enough points left at this point, there is a chance I can actually improve my position, okay? So that's really all I'm trying to show you here today is that even though we're gonna tell you what the class averages are, the highs and the lows, and if you have any specific questions, you can come ask me and I'll sit down and go over it with you. I just want, again, to point out that yes, there are people that move. We don't see large movements. So if you're at an A minus, we typically see one letter grade. You'll go to an A or a B plus. I typically don't see people going from an A minus to a B minus. That usually doesn't happen, with the one exception. People that are taking the class pass fail, when they see an A at a certain point of the semester, they do the calculations and they say, I've passed. And they'll go from an A to a C, okay? Because there's no difference, that's a passing grade, all right? So those are the only people that I will see do massive changes, and it's simply because I've passed the class, that's all I need to do. I'm not gonna focus on this class as much, I'm gonna worry about my other classes, all right? But if you're taking it for a grade, most of you are, keep doing what you're doing. There is plenty of time at this point to improve your position. There's also plenty of time at this point to lose some of your position. So you can't give up yet, all right? You can still do improve yourself. and you don't want to stop because you can go down. All right? Any questions about grades? And a reminder, your section is independent from everybody else. It doesn't matter what your friend is getting in a different section. It matters only how you're doing within the section that you are. Okay? And I know some people will say, well, this person's got an easier grading TA. Okay? Some TAs are actually a little bit easier in their grading. Some are much harder in their grading. What I tell you is I make the point cutoffs based upon total points. And I don't care how many A's in a section I have. If those are the number of A's, those are the number of A's. And statistics is a really dangerous word to use around here. I normally will see usually between 8 and 6 A's and A minuses, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. It does depend upon the size of the class. And the vast majority of you that are remaining will get mostly B pluses. I do hand out a handful of Bs and some B minuses. That does happen. And like 95 to 99% of you are going to get a B minus or better. Okay. So I know a lot of you are looking at that percentage number in Canvas going, oh, expletive. Don't worry about the percentage. Worry about where is the class average, where am I relative to that, where am I relative to the high and the low. And as I said, most of you are going to end up with at least a B minus or better, and you're not going to get a lower grade, because at this point I haven't seen the situation where TAs are not doing their jobs. That's the only time that happens. And so whatever percentage you see, that is the absolute lowest that you will possibly have. And again, almost certainly it's going to be higher than that. Okay? Alrighty. Y'all have yourselves a wonderful day, and we will see you in lab. Just a second.